on site. That was all the displays out front. Again, welcome. I'm Christopher Kennedy. I'm the CEO of Leadership Austin. We again want to welcome you this morning. Thank y'all for taking your time to come and visit with us today. As a reminder, we've been spending a lot of time this fall talking about leadership changes in the region, mostly focused on the city side. So as a reminder, early voting is going on right now for the city council elections, with December 16th being election day. In addition, if you did not get a chance, I see some familiar faces from our filming last couple weeks. We did the city summit, the civic summit with KLRU, KUT, and Ed Strauss. We have those all taped. They are on our website. So each individual candidate that was in a city runoff sat down for a conversation with us about their leadership vision and their leadership approach. Those are all on our website if you did not get a chance to see those on KLRU a couple weeks ago. So today we're pivoting to another large leadership change, and that's at the state level. So Shanna will be leading us through that conversation in a minute. I do again want to thank you for coming and want to turn it over to our presenting sponsor. Andre's representing the Austin Board of Realtors today, and then we'll get started. Thanks, Andre.
Thank you, Christopher. My name is Andre Lubomudrov, and as Christopher said, I'm with the Austin Board of Realtors. I'm filling in for our executive director, Paul Hilgers, this morning. Paul couldn't be here, but he wanted me to ask, how many realtors do we have in the room today? If you could, by a show of hands. Oh yeah, anyone looking to buy or sell a home, you can find one of these good people after the panel today. The Austin Board of Realtors is very honored to be a continuing sponsor of the Engage Breakfast series. And I've been here a year coming to these breakfasts, and we've covered many important topics, from transportation to land use issues, land use and housing affordability issues, to Austin's transition to a 10-1 council. We've covered very important local issues, and I know these conversations will continue, but with the legislature convening on January 13th, the familiar state issues will rise to the surface as well. And this panel this morning is a great opportunity to preview what some of those issues will be. I'm a recovering legislative worker. I weathered four sessions in the Texas House doing bill analysis, and I'm really thrilled that one of my favorite representatives, Representative Howard, is here on the panel this morning. Donna, I wish you and your House colleagues the best this session. With all the change in the leadership on the state level, many of us are looking to the House to be the seasoned and level-headed chamber this session. So no pressure, though. So thank you to the panelists this morning, and thank you to Leadership Austin for being such a great resource in our community. And with that, I will yield the floor to Shannon.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Thank you, Andre, very much. I'm Shannon Wolfson. I'm the evening co-anchor at KXAN, and we are always so proud to be part of these breakfasts. Part of our core purpose at KXAN is to enrich our community, and we really feel like these breakfasts help accomplish that. So thank you so much for being here this morning. You know, when we went to the polls last month to cast our votes, we, of course, knew that there were many decisions to make on the ballot. We also knew that no matter what the results, that there were going to be significant changes. And in addition to the new faces we'd see, as we mentioned, on the Austin City Council, the big six statewide offices would be brand new as well. So what we're talking about is a new governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, comptroller, land commissioner, and ag commissioner. And that means Texas saw its biggest turnover in more than a century during the November election. In addition, the Texas House will have at least 25 new members, and the Senate 8 new members. So the reality is that in January, as these newly elected officials take their seats both locally and statewide, what is on the agenda for the legislature is extremely important to all of us. And we want to know what decisions made at the state level are going to impact the priorities of our city and our county. And that's why our esteemed panelists are here today. So I want to introduce them, and then we want to get right into the discussion. Of course, to share her state level perspective, it is an honor to have Texas State Representative of District 48, Donna Howard, with us this morning. It is also a privilege for us to be joined by Dees Eckstein, who serves as the Intergovernmental Relations Coordinator with Travis County, as well as John Hernser, the Government Relations Officer for the City of Austin. And down there at the end is my colleague Kevin Schwaller, and I'm very happy to have Kevin here because he is also one of our very knowledgeable political reporters. And he represents your voice in today's discussion, and what that means is that he's going to be sharing your questions and asking your questions to the panelists through text message. And you can join the conversation today by texting 22333 and then entering ENG 1415. And that information is also there in the center of your table. So if you didn't get to write that down, it's there too. But do that at the beginning of your question, and Kevin is going to be able to ask your questions to the panelists. So we hope that you participate because we know that's a big part of the discussion, and we want to get as many of your questions in as possible. So before we dive into the specific issues this morning, when it comes to the legislature's agenda, I want to start with addressing the significant, I think we can all say, change in leadership that is ahead. And I want to know what these new faces are going to mean for really the climate of the legislature. And Representative Howard, I'd like to start with you.
Well, certainly there's going to be a huge change just by virtue of the fact that we have a new governor after 14 years of having Governor Rick Perry, who has virtually made every appointment possible in the state several times over, actually. So the change will be gradual to some extent in terms of the appointments, but we will definitely see a difference as Governor-elect Abbott comes into play and starts to appoint people to those boards and commissions and agency heads. So we don't know what to expect there, though. I think part of the unknown here is that Governor-elect Abbott has not been in a legislative-type position before. He doesn't really have a record. He's talked about some things on the campaign trail, but I think a lot of us are just going to wait and see what happens here, don't have a real clear idea. Certainly in the top three leadership positions of the governor, lieutenant governor, and Speaker of the House, as was mentioned in the introductory comments, Speaker Strauss, which I assume will be our next speaker as well, is going to be the most seasoned. And that was going to put him in the position of knowing how to operate more efficiently and effectively, perhaps, than the two others that will be coming in, never having served in those positions. And certainly, as was said, I know people laugh about it a lot, but the House will be the grown-ups this time, apparently, and that's not our usual role, so we'll see how that works. But the House didn't change a whole lot ideologically. It's very similar. So I think we'll see. Last session we had a very good working atmosphere. The speaker allowed the body to do its work, and we focused on the issues that really make a difference in the lives of Texans, and I think that's what the House is going to do this time as well.
And Dees, from your perspective, how will these new faces impact us at the county level?
Well, we're going to have new agency heads in the big agencies. Representative Howard already spoke to the governor, lieutenant governor. We are going to continue with the speaker, probably. But we're going to have a new attorney general. We're going to have a new comptroller. We're going to have a new land commissioner, new ag commissioner. As you said, Shan, the first time all six of those offices have turned over in a century. Each of those people commands large bureaucracies that have lots of responsibilities, so they're going to be spending most of the session, I think, learning just how to manage those bureaucracies. During the session, I think the Attorney General and the Comptroller are the two of those other four state officials that the legislature most hears from and most interacts with, so that'll be interesting to see what kind of leadership they give. From the perspective of the county, this is going to be a challenging session. There are eight new members of the Senate, each of whom would probably proudly tell you that they're more conservative than the person they're replacing. We're going to have at least 25 new members in the House. That's one-sixth of that body. The House has had a lot of turnover. I think it's well over half of the House has served in the legislature for 6 years or less. So you have institutional memory is a very important part of the legislative process, and that is going to be, there's going to be less of that this time around, as I think Donna Howard has pointed out. From the perspective of counties and local governments generally, many of them were elected on a platform of shrinking government. It's harder to get a hold of the state budget, which is $200 billion every 2 years, so a lot of attention will be focused on local governments, school districts, counties, cities, special districts, ACC, those sorts of things. And we anticipate that there will be a lot of legislative attention, not all of which will be welcome.
And John, what about on the city level?
Similarly, cities are a bit different from counties or school districts in that cities have a lot of authority granted to them through state statutes and the Constitution. So mostly what cities have done historically is to defend the authority that they currently have. A lot of issues come up because we've got a city that is very liberal in a very conservative state. So typically the city of Austin is defending a lot of actions that our council has taken on behalf of its citizens. And so a lot of what we try to do is to maintain the authority of the city to make the decisions here at the city and decisions to prevent decisions from being made by those who are not elected by our citizens. I think this session will be different in with the new leadership in so many state agencies, as Deese has gone over, and especially in the lieutenant governor and governor's position. We've been through a campaign, but we don't know a lot about how governor-elect Patrick will run the Senate, exactly what he'll do. He's picked senior staff members that are encouraging. Morrissey is his budget person who has worked for a number of years, Mike Morrissey, with the current governor. So Mike is an old hand at budget, very, very experienced, will add stability, I think, to the Senate. Walter Fisher has been hired. Walter has served for 4 lieutenant governors. So that will indicate some efforts at stability by the lieutenant governor. But if anyone tells you they know how it'll all work, don't believe them, because the individuals experience what it's like to run their responsible agency or section of the Senate or as governor, they'll have to develop their roles as they work into them. And I think it'll be an extremely interesting session because there are so many new faces.
John, since we've been talking about the city, I'd like to talk about one issue that you mentioned may come up in the session, and that has to do with utilities. And I'd just like to ask the room, who gets a utility bill from Austin Energy? Can you raise your hand? Okay. So city, when it comes to the city, this impacts a lot of people. What do you anticipate will happen with city utilities in the legislature?
There probably will be some efforts made at increasing deregulations among municipally owned utilities. How far that will go remains to be seen, but obviously the municipally owned utilities like the City of Austin will push to maintain our current independence. Cities are regulated, whereas most of the other utilities are not regulated, or at least in theory, deregulated. Parts of the utility industry remain regulated. The wires, even in areas that are deregulated, the piece that gets the electricity to the individual buildings is very much regulated, and those rates are determined by the PUC. So any changes that happen that might negatively impact our city's ability to run its own utility. The utility has been around a long time. We've got a mix of fuel sources which generally works to the city's advantage. We've got nuclear, solar, wind. We'd have no hydropower, but we have coal and natural gas. That mix has allowed us to have lower rates in general when one of the fuel sources goes through the roof in cost. The price of natural gas has fluctuated a lot, and municipal utilities had the ability, typically because of their mix of powers, the larger ones like us in San Antonio, were able to hedge through that. Right now, those that operate primarily with gas are at an advantage for rates, and that will impact how utilities are viewed this session.
Representative Howard?
Well, I think John's right that that is always an issue. I think that what has happened, though, when it's actually been looked at, and in regard to the fact that the state is one of the largest customers that Austin Energy has, that the legislators oftentimes realize that what's going on in Austin is actually a good deal, and stop pursuing it. So who knows what's going to happen this time, but I agree that that's probably going to be something. It's always an issue, and there's always the those coming in that don't know what a good deal we have here in Austin and assume that it needs to be like that there's no competition, and so it needs to be like the rest of the state, and then they start looking at it and realize that actually what we have here has been working very well. I know that the legislative appropriation request, the LAR, from the Texas Facilities Commission has a request for additional funds to work out a contract with the city. I think that there's definitely a sense that we want to have a working relationship here. So I assume we're going to move forward in a positive way. But, you know, there's always the sense that the legislature has a certain amount of Austin bashing in its pocket, and you don't ever know how that's going to come out. But as was stated, I think this is a pretty good description of it. The fact is that Austin is typically a more liberal community within a very conservative state, and that some of the things that happen here in the local, decided by our locally elected officials, are challenged by those who don't happen to agree with what the local citizens have decided, and try to micromanage that, if you will, at the state level. So I'm sure we'll see some of that. But quite frankly, I haven't heard as much of that kind of rhetoric as I have in the past. So hope maybe that's a good sign.
Deese, I'd like to move on, but I'd like to send this question to you. What do you think is going to be on the legislative agenda that we really need to know about here locally? And we'll get to the statewide issues, certainly, that are going to affect all of us. But locally, what do you feel like is going to be the biggest issue? And I am going to ask this question of all of you. I just want to start with Deese.
Well, the biggest job of every legislature is to pass a two-year budget for the state. As former Lieutenant Governor Bill Hoppe famously said, our job is to pass a budget. Everything else is poetry. But there will be some weird poetry probably this time around. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I think you have a lot of people who believe they were elected to help shrink government. Once they begin understanding how complex state government is and how complex the state budget is, they'll start looking for other governments to shrink so that they can go home to the voters who hired them and say, hey, I did something about that. And that means local governments like counties, cities, metropolitan transportation authorities, all those sorts of things. And so those are the sorts of things we're going to be looking for from our perspective as cities and counties. I think for the state budget, generally, schools, funding schools is going to be a continued priority. We have a court case which is now on appeal. We don't know when the Supreme Court will make a decision, and we don't know what that decision will be. But I think all the legislators are sort of mentally putting aside a little bit of money in their back of the envelope calculations on the chance that we'll be ordered to put more money into our schools. Yesterday, the or I guess the day before yesterday, the Legislative Budget Board decided on what the limit on the growth of the state appropriations are going to be. So we now know, depending on what the comptroller tells us about the revenue, how much money we're going to have to play with and how much money we're going to be able to increase funding. So those are, the budget issues are always going to be contentious. One thing related to that, that has a lot of impact on the people sitting in this room, is the legislature's discussion about what to do about Medicaid. We have a Medicaid program in the state that costs a lot of money. If we expand that Medicaid program, we can get a lot of federal money to help us take care of people who now are on burdens on local taxpayers. So the Medicaid, to the extent the Medicaid population grows, the pressure on our hospital district, on our not-for-profit hospitals who are providing charity care like St. David's. I know somebody from St. David's is here. The pressure on them will decrease. But that's a very difficult decision for the legislature to make. There are some leaders who are trying to come up with a path, a Texas path for doing that. But that's going to be a big issue and something that everybody in this room should be paying attention to.
John?
Deese has hit really the main topics.
Yeah.
and school funding, and particularly here in Austin, it's a big deal. Because of all the school districts in the state of Texas, the Austin Independent School District puts more back into the state fund than any other school district in the state, which means that $172 million, I think, is their current annual contribution to the state fund. That money is money that they collect that then is distributed throughout the state. That funding scheme is what's being one of the things that's being challenged in the courts, and depending on how that ultimately is decided will lead the legislature either to leave things the same, or if at least part of Judge Dietz's decision on school funding, if substantial parts of it are upheld, the legislature will have to make changes in school funding. Then that may very well be an opportunity for local government here in particular to change that system, where right now local taxpayers are taking a disproportionate share of the state funding for the school system. And that very much affects our local taxes, and certainly the city, and I suspect the county, even though we're not directly involved with school funding, that piece of it impacts our local taxpayers to such an enormous degree that we'll be involved in those discussions. So I think the budget is always a major piece of it. We will see a lot of other issues that are raised that are peripheral and fairly small, and sometimes even you have to look a bit under the apparent issue. And I'm going to pick one insignificant issue, but it will probably come up, and that's Austin and other cities have regulations on shopping bags. The first in the state, I think, was that den of communist activity, Fort Stockton, who were fed up with the littering that these very thin shopping bags create. They'll work up through a landfill and blow around, and they had there isn't a lot of vegetation, so these bags were very visible, and the city enacted an ordinance requiring that these very flimsy plastic bags not be given away. Several other cities have, and at the legislature you'll hear the complaints and the testimony and the front opposition to these ordinances is the retailers, but that's not who's driving it. The big fight is, and I don't blame them, if I were in that business I would fight too, and they're in primarily a couple of districts, it's the manufacturers of those bags, and so that's that sort of conflict is inevitable in government, and you'll see a lot of things like that throughout the legislative session.
And Shannon, can I use the bag ban as an example of the difference between John's job and mine? Cities this is somewhat of an oversimplification, but cities can do anything that the legislature hasn't told them they can't do. So, for instance, the decision to pass a bag ordinance was, in Fort Stockton and in Austin, appropriate use of the powers, health and safety powers of the city granted under their charters. Counties can only do what the legislature has told us we can do. So if somebody came to me and said, when are you going to do a bag ban for the county? I would tell them we don't have the authority to do a bag ban, and the likelihood of getting that authority from the legislature is very low. Mm-hmm. So don't anticipate a bag ban in your unincorporated area grocery stores or whatever. But that's a big difference between how the city relates to the legislature and how the county relates to the legislature, because things we want to do, we have to get permission from the legislature to do. So that's an important distinction to understand about what our relative role in state government is.
Representative Howard, what do you see on the agenda for the legislature that we should really be aware of here locally that could have an impact on all of us?
Well, I know it's redundant, but the budget is what it's all about. Bill Hammond with the Texas Association of Business was quoted this week as saying, this session the big issue is going to be the budget. And a lot of that is because we have a surplus. A lot of that is because we have newly elected legislators who came in with a specific agenda about how they wanted the budget to function. And most of the rhetoric is around limiting the legislators' ability to, in my opinion, appropriately invest in those things that we need to invest in to keep Texas moving forward. So let me just explain it a little bit more. We do have a surplus. We also have a budget that we currently have in place with many holes in it. Unless we have a real honest discussion with everybody about what's really going on, it's going to be very difficult, I think, for us to make responsible decisions that really reflect what the communities want to have happen. And so what I would like to have happen myself is that we have more of an opportunity like the one we're having today, where we talk about what the issues are and what's really going on with our budget. So, for instance, we do have a $200 billion two-year budget, as Dee said. That's huge. We are the 12th largest economy in the world. We only meet as a legislative body once every other year to manage that $200 billion budget. Until recently, we only got the revenue projections from the comptroller right before we came into session every other year. We now get it once each year. And I don't think many businesses would actually run that way. The fact is that we do have a surplus, as I said, but we also have a budget that is not fully funded. When in 2006, when we had the property tax swap for the reduction in the property values for the property assessment for our public schools, we reduced the maximum from $1.50 to $1 at that point. That was about a $14 billion swap that the state said, we will find that money. We will provide additional sources of revenue to cover that $14 billion. Superintendents, school boards, it's okay. You can go ahead and compress your tax rate, and don't worry about it. We'll hold you harmless here, which, of course, we did not do when there was a downturn in the economy two sessions ago and those budgets were cut. We did not fulfill our promise to the school districts. Right now, the margin tax, which most people do not like, that we put into place in 2006 to cover this property tax swap, or at least part of it, that very unpopular tax barely funds the $14 billion that it is supposed to be a part of funding. So we come in having to use about $8 billion worth of surplus just to cover the 2006 property tax swap. Okay? So part of the surplus is already essentially called for to cover the property tax swap. And in addition to that, as you've probably heard, there's a lot of things that we assess fees on and taxes that we're not spending on the purpose that we told you we were going to spend them on. We're just holding on to that money to balance the budget. There's about $4 billion there. And we underfunded Medicaid by over $1 billion. Okay, so my point being, when we come back, we have a few things we've got to pay for. with that surplus. And yet we're going to have a lot of people that are going to say, let's have tax cuts. We've got a surplus. Let's give money back. And that sounds good to all of us. Who would not want that? But we have to be able to look at it responsibly. And we're not even talking about population growth and any additional needs we might need to be looking at next time. So my biggest concern, and I think the biggest challenge, is going to be how do we really honestly talk about the budget? How do we talk about what our priorities are in terms of investing in transportation and water infrastructure, as well as human capital and education? How do we do that and be responsible about the budget that we have to work with?
Kevin, I'd like to get to some questions from the audience. Anything, topics coming in?
Yeah, we have quite a few, actually. One of the ones, because we've already talked about it, if we could get back to Medicaid for a moment. And I think both the two folks here, Deese and Representative Howard, could speak to this, especially with your experience in the medical field. One of the questions is there any sort of, do you believe that the state will come up with any sort of Texas-style plan, its own plan for expansion of Medicaid? And if not, is there a local version of it that could be done in some way?
Well, I'll just jump in. There's absolutely a local version in terms of our 1115 waiver that I know there's some people here from the hospital district, the health, Central Health, and that has been great to have something in place in Travis County where we are bringing together what resources we have and leveraging what we can to address the needs of those that do not have access to health care otherwise. It doesn't mean that we're doing everything we need to do in Travis County, but it's certainly a very positive step that we've been able to take here. But in terms of the Texas solution that Deese mentioned a while ago, I do think that we'll have more of a likelihood of considering that now. And in fact, we just saw this week that the Senate has actually, Senator Schwartner's committee is actually indicating that we need to move forward with that. It's been a huge drain on our local governments to have to deal with this. When we had federal dollars that we have paid through our income taxes that's not coming back here to help our citizens. Unfortunately, last session, we did have the same Texas solution proposed. We had sufficient votes for that to pass. You know, we only needed a simple majority of 76 in the House. We had over 90 people who were ready to vote for that, but we never got a chance to vote because of the politics of the primary. And there were some that did not want to have a vote for the Texas solution on their record when the primary elections were coming up, because that was going to be a challenge to them. It's just quite simply politics was getting in the way of doing good public policy here. Now, that has not changed, but at the same time, I think we have moved forward enough to where perhaps that won't be as onerous a restriction now on our doing the right thing here. And that is, we bring the federal dollars that are due us back into our communities and get it off the backs of Commissioner Daugherty over here and others who are having to take care of finding ways to fund things that with their limited budgets. So I'm hopeful.
Well, I was just gonna add that we're in the fourth year, I think, of the 1115 waiver. So we must now renegotiate the 1115 waiver if it is going to be continued. It's a 5-year waiver. We must now renegotiate that with the federal government. And I think that the conversation is, can we renegotiate the 1115 waiver in a way that we kind of sneak in some of this, what we would call the Texas solution, the principles of the Texas solution, into that waiver, do it as an amendment to the waiver, have the legislature sign off on it, have the big agencies and especially the federal government sign off on it, and as Representative Howard points out, bring a lot of money into Texas to cover people who are either underserved right now or are not served by the current Medicaid or health care delivery system.
Kevin, can we get one more from the audience?
Yeah. And John, this one would be for you. We started talking about the utilities here, and this is asking what the city's position is on the EPA's clean proposals, the new Clean Air Act proposals, and what you believe, if any, the legislature or AG's role will be as well.
This is a more complicated question, then it'll require a bit of nuance. I'm not sure that I can simply say that we have a position. In general, the Council supports the efforts that the EPA does and has promulgated to improve air quality. That'll have a big impact on everybody in the country. There are a lot of health effects of our current air that I think can be addressed by some changes. But on the other hand, we also operate a utility that burns coal. And coal is one of the major polluters. And so we need the city of Austin, like other utilities, needs some flexibility as we phase out older technologies. We have improved our coal plant. It has about as much as possible to be done in the way of scrubbing to improve the air, the emissions that we put into the air. The city and LCRA and San Antonio, who own pieces of several different kinds of plants, including the Fayette power plants, we have done a lot to try to improve those. But the issue is not just simply are you for it, against it, but how it's implemented. We do need some flexibility, I think, to make it work effectively for us.
Just real quick, I wanted to let the audience know, too, if you guys are hearing anything, obviously there are a lot of opinions in this room. If you're hearing anything and want to reflect that you have a difference in opinion, feel free to text in or speak up, and we can try and get that into the dialogue here.
And I just want to add to that this is another example of us collect at the state collecting monies that we're not spending on their intended purpose. We do have a program to help with emissions reductions that has been accumulating and growing in the state coffers that is just now being used to balance the budget, part of that $4 billion, but in fact could come back to the communities like Austin to help with emissions reduction. And it's those kinds of things that we need to be paying attention to and advocating for. And the communities do that. John and Deese and others are at the Capitol all the time trying to help legislators understand how significant it is that these funds be used to actually achieve the purpose that they were put in place for, and that it can make economic sense for communities to do that, because certainly we don't want to go into non-attainment here, and the new EPA rules do actually challenge us a bit there to make sure that we do stay in an attainment.
Deese and John, I'm curious what you all think are going to be the state legislative priorities that may conflict with the priorities of the county and the city of Austin. Deese?
Personally, the thing I'm most worried about is a policy called revenue caps, which is the idea that the legislature would tell cities and counties and other governmental bodies how much they can increase their budgets by from year to year. Obviously, at a time of fast growth, a lot of needs, those decisions are best made by people at the local level. None of us like having to pay taxes, but we sure like having the services that our cities, counties, and communities provide. And so it has been the wisdom of the legislature previously that those decisions are best made at the local level. But again, there are people who have been elected, they believe, to try to shrink government somehow, and we're very worried about that. And I think John and I probably are going to spend a lot of time this session working on what we call the revenue cap issue. There have already been bills filed in both the House and the Senate to lower the current revenue caps and make it harder for communities to make the kind of decisions we need to make.
John, do you have anything to add to that?
That is probably going to be at the very top of our of local governments concerned. And if you look at infrastructure that's being built around the country, it is largely being built by cities and counties. And if cities and counties' ability to raise revenue to do things like transportation is limited even further, especially it will have a big impact on all the areas that are growing rapidly. And in Texas, that's the big cities. the I-35 corridor and along the Gulf Coast. It's where the rapid growth is occurring, and that's where the needs are for services from utilities to transportation, public safety, etc. And limitations that don't recognize those growing needs, especially when both the state and federal governments are reducing their expenditures in these basic areas, would be harmful, I think, to the prosperity that we've seen here in Texas.
Shannon, let me bring up another issue that we're going to be proactive on. I think the city and the other cities are going to be proactive on as well, and that's transportation funding. We essentially have gotten to where the state is funding the population growth and the growth in miles traveled, number of cars on the road, and all that through either toll roads or debt. We are now maxed out on our credit card for the debt. There has been a resistance to trying to put more money into our transportation funding. The voters took that on just this last month by voting to increase, to divert some money from the rainy day fund into transportation funding. That's going to be, in a good year, about $1.8 billion, excuse me, for transportation funding, which is great, except the Texas Department of Transportation says, yeah, but we need $5 billion a year just to maintain current congestion. So if you like the congestion you have now, write a check for $5 billion. If you want to reduce the congestion, then we're going to talk about some real money. So I think the cities and the counties are going to be encouraging the state with all this money that you have, Representative Howard, to make some bigger investments in transportation and put that money to use in serving our transportation network. We have a situation here in Travis County where we have some state roads that are the responsibility of the state to maintain. There's growth booming around those roads, as a result of which the roads need to be widened. They need to have those turn lanes put in. They need more street lights and stop lights. They need crossing zones for the kids, all that sort of stuff. But the state just hasn't had the money to do it. So what Travis County does is we cut a deal with the state where we'll do it for them, and they'll pay us back, we hope. All the money that we're spending now doing that for the state is money we could be spending on our county road system in order to keep that up, in order to expand it, in order to meet the growth we're having. So that's a real challenge for local governments. The city has to make the same kinds of investments in the road network. And so I think proactively we're going to be working to see if the state can ante up some more money for a transportation system.
You know, the money for this, I'm sorry, comes out of the same pocket, whether you're talking about the state or the local or the federal. It's our pockets that it's coming out of. So it gets to be kind of an argument about where it should go and which part of the money coming out of that pocket goes to which pot. But because of the way it's divvied up, it's not always equitably and fairly distributed among the population. And also part of the problem here, as Deese has been talking about, I think John too, the state has fallen back on some of its responsibilities, the traditional responsibilities that we've had, and so therefore have pushed more and more onto the local jurisdictions. At the same time, we want to tie their hands, which makes it an untenable kind of situation in so many ways. So, for instance, with the school districts, you know, at one time the state was covering a much higher proportion of the cost of public education, and we keep sliding back, and right now, especially here in Austin, with the growth in property values, well, the property value increase, you probably know, does not benefit the school districts. It's a windfall for the state. As more money comes in from the property tax collections, that offsets what the state owes in general revenue. So what's happened now is we've made a budget based on what the anticipated property values would be. It's actually higher than what the budget was based on. That delta, the change there between what we budgeted for and what it actually is not going to benefit Austin or the local school districts at all. It just means we pay less at the state level.
I'm curious, Representative Howard, because this is a big issue, if you feel like the legislature is going to address property tax relief.
Well, property, we talked, what's going to be big on the agenda this next time? That's going to be big on the agenda, but it's going to be all across the board as to what's being proposed about what to do there, most of which I think will be what looks good on the surface, but may not really address the underlying issues here. I think that there will be an effort. I know that Senator Watson and Representative Eddie Rodriguez both have legislation that they've put together to allow a local homestead exemption to be increased to offset the amount that has to be paid into the local property taxes. Those kinds of things will be proposed. But the proposals that I think they're most concerned about, John and Deesh, are the proposals that want to address property value increases by caps, by artificially manipulating how much can be raised, and there's a real danger in that. I guess y'all remember Prop 13 from California and how that impacted public education in California many years ago. There was a program on PBS at one time after that called From First to Worst. It was a huge change in what they were able to deliver at the local level by having their hands tied. They simply could not do what needed to be done to meet the needs of their community. I believe, though, that we will be looking at trying to do some things with school finance, which is a little different than what you're asking me about, but I just want to make sure I get that in. The fact is that we will be waiting probably for the courts to finally make a decision before we do anything major, but at the same time, there is some discussion going on right now about what are some of the things that we could do to tweak some things that might impact all of the school districts in Texas. So, for instance, we might look at funding, putting full-day pre-K into the funding formulas rather than expecting the Austin School District to use money that it had for some other program and having to divert that because the state's not paying for it. Everybody in the state, basically, knows that pre-K is going to be a significant factor in improving educational outcomes in our state. Texas Association of Business is behind that as well. But we somehow need to fund it. And that's one of the things that perhaps we could get behind and do something about this session.
I'd really like to get to as many audience questions as possible because the time is ticking. So,
yeah, this is one I've seen come up now a couple of times, kind of stands out from the rest, but it has to do with firearms in the state. One of them looked back at the shooting this weekend and pointed out all the bills that have been filed regarding gun legislation so far pre-filed, but this one says that Governor-elect Abbott has already said he'd sign an open carry bill. What are the chances it actually makes it to his desk this session? And then if you could talk about kind of just in general what you think the future of different gun legislation is this session.
And well, just to add to that, I'm curious if you're surprised if Governor-elect Abbott, that was what he addressed. That was the one issue he addressed the very day after the election, and I'm curious if you were surprised about that.
Well, it certainly would not have been my number one priority to address, but at the same time, I don't think there's any question that it'll probably get to his desk. Texas is one of, I think there's all 49 other states, I think it's 49. Have open carry. So, you know, the fact that Texas doesn't, I think it's a pretty sure thing that we will. I think it is interesting, though. I had a gentleman in my office just yesterday, law enforcement. He's with law enforcement. He teaches concealed handgun classes. And he was in with some suggestions about how to modify what he thinks is an inevitability here. I think there is a lot of concern among law enforcement about how we do this in a responsible way if we're going to do it. You know, there's so much, it's become so political. It's become such a knee-jerk kind of response that you have to have to this that people sometimes have difficulty, I think, looking at what is a responsible way to move forward. I think that's going to be our challenge here. I think it's inevitable. It's going to happen. But we need to really be paying attention to law enforcement. I think last time when we were looking at guns on campus, which a lot of folks were trying to push for, one of the reasons that it didn't go as far as it could have was because law enforcement said to us, that's going to make our job more difficult. You can't do that. That's going to make our job more difficult. And luckily, the legislature listened to at least part of that. So, I think it's going to happen.
Kevin.
Next question. Let me pull this up again. We talked a lot about the different money and funding sources. Obviously, that's going to be a huge issue for whatever it is, transportation, other projects. How do you believe, with the energy industry being so big in the state, the decline in oil prices is going to factor into all that this session?
Y'all keep coming to me. Y'all want to take that?
You want to take that one real quick, and then because I have one for
She's saying this quick because I'm a politician. I talk too much. the volatility is always a problem, and we have to be very cautious about how we move forward. We're doing very well right now. We've got some money in the bank. We'd like to project that's going to continue, but certainly we know that the prices have been fluctuating, and we have to be cognizant of that and make sure that we don't over-rely on that source of income.
So for Dees and John, this is kind of the alternative question to what I asked earlier, and this is, what do you feel like are some of the state priorities that are going to benefit us locally, Travis County and in Austin? Dees? Anything you're not going to have to fight for?
I'm certainly hoping that the Medicaid conversation goes in a positive direction, because I think that will make a big difference for the quality of health care delivered in this community. Central Health works with limited resources and does a really good job, but the more people we can cover and the more we can fund that with state and federal money, the better off our community is going to be. So I'm excited about that. I'm actually cautiously optimistic that we'll put some money into transportation. I think the critical mass is we're very close to critical mass of legislators who think, yeah, we should make continued investments. So and by the way, they got a lot of support from you voters who voted 80% to adopt that constitutional amendment. So, you know, sometimes they feel like they have to have some cover from their voters, and I think that was a good sign for us. So those are the kinds of things. I hope the state will continue to fund the court system and the jails to the extent that they do put some money into that. That's very important to us. That's the bread and butter services of what we deliver as a county. So we do some very innovative stuff in Travis County. The legislature has been supportive of that. I hope that will continue.
And the Speaker of the House has said that funding transportation is going to be basically his number one priority. He's already talking about stopping the diversions of motor fuels taxes so that all of that goes to transportation. So I think Dees is right. That is something that's probably going to happen, at least to some extent.
John, what do you hope will specifically benefit people in the city of Austin?
Transportation funding is a big piece of it. It's one of our top priorities. We will really be pushing for it. And any improvements in that funding in stopping the diversions from the fund that's provided through the gas tax to other entities other than transportation, the more that goes into transportation will help us and all the other rapidly growing areas of Texas. So transportation is a key one. Medicaid is very important, obviously, simply because of the large numbers of uninsured that remain, and that if we could get them into an insurance program of some sort, that will help all the urban areas and the rural areas throughout the state. But school finance, I think the more emphasis that's being played on it, the attention that it's getting because of the court case, relief in that would be a huge benefit for the taxpayers here in Austin, just because of the way it's structured and the fact that we're rapidly an area where the property values are going up rapidly, and are we are in fact one of the main funders of the state education program for public schools. Any change in that will help Austin taxpayers a lot, and I think we're moving toward that change.
One other area where the legislature has shown some real leadership the last few sessions, and I think it will continue, hope it will continue this session, is we are really looking at how mental health services are funded and delivered statewide. There's a mix of a state infrastructure that you have to have, and then there's local services, local providers. You want to have local control over it, but you want to have a state infrastructure you can rely on. The legislature has increased mental health funding each of the last two sessions, even back in 2011 when they were cutting everything else. They put more money into mental health. That's a good trend. I certainly hope the members of the Appropriations Committee will continue to fight for increased mental health funding around the state, because it really does benefit all of us. And the mental health infrastructure in our communities is very important, and it's sometimes invisible until you see something like that, what happened this weekend with that fellow. So,
Kevin, I'd like to get one more question from the audience, if we could, and quick answers, because we are running out of time.
Yeah, this one kind of ties in everybody here. Water supply issues. How will cities, counties, or how do cities, counties, and the state work together to ensure that we have a water supply that will last into the future here?
The city obviously is in the water business, so we pay a lot of attention. It's one of our top priorities. It's the reason why I jumped in ahead of everybody else, but all of you should comment on it. Surface water rights are allocated through a scheme that was set up about 30 years ago. Anything that would weaken our position under that allocation system, we will oppose. The constitutional amendment, the authorization to put more money into water funding that passed 2 years ago, it will help alleviate some of the water needs in the state. I don't expect that there will be a much more funding put into it, but I think looking at ways to use the funding that was allocated to build a few more reservoirs, and there are places that they can be built. For example, all-stream reservoirs on the Colorado River, which would store flood waters that could then be released, which would help the rice farmers. That would help the water balance in our water basin in particular. So there are a few things that are going to be that are in progress now on water, but I think that you may see some legislation on groundwater, but there'll have to be an even greater crisis, I think, than we have now before the legislature will take up the issue of free capture, which is essentially the water rights. Water isn't regulated the way oil is. If you take oil, if I drill an oil well on my property, but I take oil from underneath your ground, you get compensated for that. Our water system is not operated that way. I can put a well in my property and pump the aquifer dry under current state law, and that's been upheld. At some point, we'll have to change that, and I don't think it'll happen this session, but you'll see more discussion about that.
I'm so sorry. I'm not going to be able to let all of you answer that question. Because we really want to get to a very important question, and this is what we do at the end of every breakfast, and that is what we call a call to action, because we all want to know what we can do to stay informed about these issues and to make the most positive impact in our community. So I want to ask all three of you what you believe is the most important thing we can all do as individuals and as taxpayers to kind of help shape what is going on in the legislature, and to stay informed about the decisions that our lawmakers are making. Representative Howard?
Well, certainly what you're doing today is a very important part of that. It's extremely important that those of you that are in leadership positions here in the community interact with your constituency, whatever it might be, and make sure that they're informed about what's going on. As I've alluded to several times, we have to have honest discussions about what's going on with our budget in particular, and it can be a very obtuse kind of thing to get into. So the more that we can have discussions about it, the more that you're informed about it by coming to things like this, by following the legislature online. We have a website. You can get email alerts to bills if you're interested in following those. You're here in Austin. I would love for you to testify. Come to the, I know we make it difficult, but if you can be a part of that, the fact is we need people to step up, leaders in the community to step up and say, we need to do the right thing. We need to invest in our communities. And what's the best way to do that? You know, we get those answers together. I invite you to be a part of the discussion.
Deese?
I would, first of all, second Representative Howard's notion of just pay attention. You know, there's the Texas Legislature Online. If you just Google Texas Legislature Online, you will go to a website. We're actually one of the best states in the country for a website where you can find bills, you can search for bills by topic. As she's pointed out, you can set up your own little account so you can track bills. They'll send you a notice if there's going to be a committee hearing. So just being informed about that. We also have, I think we're lucky, partly because we're in the state capitol, to have excellent news information about it. Both the print journalism, the Austin American Statesman, the Texas Tribune, KXAN, and the other stations really do a good job of covering this stuff. So, you know, follow the information, and as Representative Howard suggests, get involved. Show up. Testify on a bill. Write a letter to your legislator. All those things are ways in which we can make a difference.
And John?
I think that all of those are very important, and we're fortunate in Austin in that we do have good coverage of the state by the Statesman. I would say 20 years ago when I started in this job, the Statesman wasn't the top in the state as far as covering the legislature. It is, I think, now is probably the top in covering the legislature. KXAN, the other stations cover it. Pay attention and respond. Testifying is very important, and feel free to contact me if there's a city issue you particularly want to follow. My office will work with you if you've got an issue that you want to participate in. Contact us, and that is an important resource for cities, because cities are fundamentally a grassroots organization. They're all over the state, so getting input from citizens is a way of influencing legislation that's so critically important to us.
I'm just going to plug KXA in here because we have an Emmy award-winning political program that runs every Sunday morning. It's called State of Texas In Depth, and especially during the session, our reporters and our Josh Hinkle cover everything that's happened during the legislative week. So that's State of Texas In Depth every Sunday morning on KXAN.
Thank you so much, Shannon. What a great conversation. Please join me in thanking our panel. My name is Julie Smith, and I'm the program manager for the Engage Breakfast Series. I want to thank you for being here, and thank you for caring about the community. On behalf of all of us at Leadership Austin, happy holidays. We hope to see you again on January 14th.
Tonight at the party.
And tonight at the holiday party.